good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
I'm Robert Diamond.
This is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
Really sleepy today.
Are you? Why?
Well, I thought jet lag didn't exist.
Right.
But I think I've been proven wrong.
You've been screaming in everyone's face, jet lag doesn't exist.
We went for dinner the other night and I was literally like... We met our friend, the actor Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal, yeah.
We hung out with our dear friend, Pedro Pastel.
Yeah.
And he was like, you look really jet-lagged. And I was like, jet-lag doesn't exist, like really aggressively across the table. And then last night we went to see his play and afterwards, I was awake for the whole play. But then after the play, I was just falling asleep.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm hungover today, so we're both in the same sort of boat. We went out last night after King Lear because it's a heavy show.
It was a heavy show.
We went out and had a few drinks.
It was with Glenda Jackson. And she was
Pedro Pastel. Ruth Wilson.
Ruth was amazing.
Amazing.
As well. And Pedro's performance, I thought, was like the best thing.
Yeah,
it was
phenomenal.
Just incredible.
Phenomenal. So anyway, we are joined today by an incredibly vibrant, special, wonderful, dynamic artist. I saw his work in a group show at the Jeffrey Deitch Space on Worcester Street in New York in a show called Punch. Group show curated by Nina Chanel Abney.
We love Nina Chanel.
We love. And I remember I saw this work and I thought it was incredible, his work, and I Instagrammed it. And then we connected on Instagram and he slid into my DMs in a professional sense and said, come do a studio visit. And I did. So I went all the way up to Brooklyn and that was around Halloween last year. And then
I love that you can do that now. Like, you can just meet your heroes
straight
away.
It's the magic of Instagram.
Good
anyway.
One.
And he's joined today. He's an emerging artist and he's incredibly exciting and he's got an amazing voice. And we would love to welcome to Talk Art,
John Key.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm also a little sleepy.
You are? What did you do last night?
Work. And then I watched Last Watch on HBO, the documentary of the making of Game of Thrones. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No. Yeah, I'm obsessed with Game of Thrones, but...
There's a two-hour documentary about the making of the last season, and it is amazing.
Did you like the last season?
I really liked the last season. Like, I rewatched the whole series, like, right before I watched the last season. So I understand what they had to do. Like, I feel like they ended it in a way that was necessary.
Because the books didn't exist anymore, did they?
Yeah. And we knew that Daenerys was going crazy. I don't know. Can I talk about spoilers?
Absolutely. Whatever. It's been on. You should have watched it. If you haven't watched it, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many memes about it. But I just felt like Daenerys had to die. I felt like, you know.
But did you like the way she died? I was really frustrated by it. It all felt too
It was just too
easy.
Poetic.
Everybody's deaths were too easy.
I agree. It wasn't climactic enough.
No.
But I felt like they were definitely, that last episode was all poetry. You know, they just really had to like figure out beautiful.
I didn't know. But where Tyrion just reveals like two bricks and there's Jaime and Cersei there, like trussed up lovers dead. I was like, more than two, like there's just like a light peppering of brick was on top of them.
Definitely not factual or actual or real.
Right.
But I definitely...
But it never was. There's dragons and giants and the dead are living, so...
But Tyrion's monologues, I think, were really beautiful.
Beautiful.
He's in the last episode.
I love him.
I basically am in complete silence right now because I've never seen it. And I need to start from the beginning. And also, the main reason I wanted to see it is because Pedro's in it.
Pedro, isn't he?
And I've never seen him in it. And I really want to see it.
He plays Oberon, the guy who gets his eyes gouged out by the mountain. Do you remember?
Oh, what?
Yeah.
He's amazing in it,
apparently. Do you remember?
Yes, I do. He is amazing.
So he's in King Lear at the minute. So
I also want to watch King Lear. Y'all were talking about it.
Yeah.
I want to watch it.
Game of Thrones aside. So we met at this group show at the Jeffrey Deitch Museum. And you were put in that show by Nina because she's a friend of yours and a collector of your work, right?
Yes. Nina saw my work at Spring Break Art Fair in like 2018.
Right.
And became a collector. We kind of messaged back
and
forth.
That was last year. Didn't you do Spring Break before that then?
I did. I've done Spring Break three times.
So
last year was my, like this past year was my third year doing it.
Right. But she just, because the show was last year, wasn't it? So she'd have seen it in 2017, right?
Well, I did it in 2017. I did it in 2018, which is when she got a painting, and then I did it in 2019.
Right.
Yeah, so that's when we met, was like around that show.
And she lives with your work, didn't you say?
She lives with my work, yeah. It's amazing. It's like, I was talking to them, and they're like, you know, it's amazing waking up to your painting every morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, this is so amazing. And I love Nina's work, and she's such a hero and inspiration for me. So it's just kind of, I don't know, remarkable and humbling just to be a part of that experience and be a part of her world.
Yeah.
And for her to respect me and my work and put me in a show, it's all very exciting.
It was an amazing group show, incredible artists she was alongside. And do you feel like that's made a change being in that group show? I mean, you met me, obviously, but...
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it did because, I mean, I got a solo show opportunity right after that because of that group show.
That was at the Rubber Factory.
And at the Rubber Factory, which is directed by Mike Tan. And that was really amazing, just the opportunity to do that. And also, again, having another opportunity to show my work and, like, do more of that type of kind of big wall environmental landscape paintings.
Do you paint directly on the walls, like murals, or do you work on...
No, so that work was all on paper. Mm-hmm. But I call them wall paintings just because they're so big. Uh-huh. And the way that I, like, work is on a wall, and it's, like, taping this kind of 6 by 6 feet piece of paper or larger to a wall and painting on them. But now I'm transitioning over into experimenting on canvas and doing some paintings of acrylic paintings on canvas. So I'm excited about that.
The thing that I found really impressive about the images that I've seen, because I've seen the one that Russell has, but I haven't actually seen a show.
House, right, on Instagram.
I saw it on Instagram. Yeah, it looks amazing.
Yeah, totally great. But I haven't actually seen a show in person myself yet. But from the photographs I've seen, I love the way that you do create a complete environment and that you can like walk into this space and it's completely created by you. It's like an immersive experience. So even though you do make works on paper which look like paintings on paper, but that you can hang on the wall, but actually the wallpaper, the kind of floor, like everything, it's like a total experience. Interior, and I love that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and like Spring Break and my solo show was kind of the first time that I did like the wallpaper and the violet pattern and all of that. But Spring Break, I was actually able to do like all the walls painted in like paint 270 tiles, like two different colors of violet, and lay them out.
Did you do them all yourself? Like it wasn't.
I had a crew of people to help me lay everything out, but I painted them all myself.
Right.
But I had my amazing friends from Codify Art, Serena, Gordon, Jared Key, my twin, my partner, Y.L. Morco's. Like I had a lot of people out helping me because I can never do that alone. It was so much work.
Yeah, cool. It was amazing. But when I met you, I came to your house and your studio. You have a work, live, space.
Yes.
And it's amazing, but you are looking to move somewhere else now.
I need more space. I want a place where I can get messier. You know, the biggest problem with painting in, you know, a house space or apartment building, you can't really use toxins, you can't really use like oil paint, you can't really like get that messy.
Yeah.
So I just want like a space where I can get a little bit messy. I think I will still paint in my house. Like I love the accessibility of that, but I also want places to do bigger things and messier things and paint in oil and make clothes and do sculpture and just expand the practice.
Are you looking near where you live?
Yeah, I found a place, like actually my friend, Jez is going to RISD actually for their MFA, and she has friends in this kind of art building in Bed-Stuy, which is like 10 minutes from my house.
Perfect.
So it's like,
I mean, the convenience of having it literally next door to your bedroom and living room must be really great for you.
It's great. I like, you know, I can, anytime I have inspiration, I can go in and like start painting, but it's also bad because I really never have a break. You know, I'm always wanting to paint. It's like, oh, if I just do one more thing at 1 a.m., it's going to be great, you know?
And what's it like for your partner living with your studio as well?
I mean, because my partner is also a graphic designer, and we also do that together, and we run a studio together. So it's like, he also works out of the apartment. Like, so it's, we have designers that come over, we have clients that come over. So it's a really nice space. I mean, like, it's really nice for us because we both kind of find our spaces in the house to make our work. And we kind of have designated zones for like, this is the messy room, or this is kind of like the neat computer clean area. But it's kind of nice. I think it's exciting. I think they like it. He likes it because, I don't know, it's inspiring. It's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something different than what we do, I think.
The thing I love a lot about your work is the self-portraiture element to it, as in your artwork. And Russell has an amazing one. It's you in this incredible purple-violet suit.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a recurring theme for you.
Yes.
So how did you... When did you first start, like, painting yourself?
Yeah, so I started painting myself probably when I first started painting. So I'm a twin. So growing up, you know, we were introduced into theater and doing... singing in the church choir and doing pageants and stuff like that.
Where did you grow up?
In Alabama, right. Uh-huh. I'm from Seal, Alabama.
Wow.
Now I'm in New York. But so growing up, we were artsy kids. You know, we did theater camps. We did all of that. And I think
But that's great that your parents pushed that side of...
They did, but I think it was also still like a battle. Like, I don't think our parents wanted us to be artists, but I think now looking back, our mom literally said last time we were home, is like, I couldn't... Like, y'all were destined to be artists. Like, everything we did growing up was art. But so when I first started painting and, like, figuring out how to paint, I used to paint myself. And I think that was so interesting just because I was, like, and it's like, 10 years old, figuring out the differences between my twin and I, maybe, really trying to figure out, like, who I am versus who he is because... Yeah. Who they are. So I don't know, that's how I started. And then when I also started HTML at the same time. Like my mom brought home this HTML graphic design book.
Right.
And was like, oh, someone at her job said that y'all would like this. Y'all are smart. Like, do this. So I started graphic design and painting at the exact same time, like amazing, when I was 10. And then moving forward, like college or high school, I painted a lot of self-portraiture, like my whole AP thesis thing, like AP.
What's AP stand for?
AP is like, what is it? It's like college stuff. It's like to get a college credit. Like,
It's like a degree.
It's like a degree. It's like a thing you take college credit courses in high school and you can like test and then get out of a credit.
I don't know. We don't.
I don't know if we have that.
We don't have like the A levels, I think.
You heard it sounds like a project or something, like a project you do in order to get.
So if you take like AP history, for example,
right?
That means like, oh, when I'm going to be a history major when I go to college, maybe I can get one less credit, right. You know, I have to take one less credit because I took this history class in high school.
Got it.
So it's like college credit classes, like college level classes, but you do them in high school and then you test for a college credit.
Right.
Anyways, I did AP art. I did a lot of APs, but one of them were AP art and I did a bunch of self-portraits for that. And so...
But if you're a twin, I guess they're self-portrait, but they're also your twin, right?
Well, it's interesting. So we're fraternal, but people say we look identical. And so I think there was always a question...
What does fraternal mean? What do you mean?
Fraternal, like we, it's like science, like, you know, we weren't born from the same eggs, but like two separate eggs or something, and
we look the same, but
we don't look exactly the same.
Oh, okay, so you're non-identical twins.
We're not identical, exactly.
Okay, got it, right.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's like, you know, it's like a scientific term, but we look pretty similar, so it's really weird.
Yeah.
But when I started the Man in the Violent Suit series specifically, that was kind of a response to the Porcelando nightclub shooting. And thinking about the spaces that queer people take up and claim as safe. And at the same time, kind of my own practice also includes writing. So I was doing a lot of writing and personal narrative work and stream of consciousness writing of kind of talking about these four themes of my identity, which are blackness, queerness, family, and southerness. And through my writing and through kind of like process, I got to these four colors, which are violet for queerness, green for southerness, black for blackness, and red for family. That's kind of like the foundation of it. And I think why I started doing self-portraiture is because like, you know, if you have nobody else to paint, like you paint yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and I almost always a firm believer, like I want to figure out my story, like as an artist, as a person before I can assume the responsibility of figuring out somebody else's story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it's a lot of also like self-diagnosis or like self-narrative building and self-world building. I don't know.
And those four colors, is this what you set yourself as a rule, I guess, now to only work in those four colors?
Exactly. So all of my paintings are all linked through those four colors. So it's kind of has a figure or it has a landscape. It's linked by those four colors and also specific gestures that come from my family. So, for example, all of my paintings are comprised of memories from my home. So, for example, my grandmother's nickname was Polka Dot. And so in the painting, there's like these polka dots on the painting.
Oh, I love that.
What I've got on my one.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And then my dad is a construction worker. He owns his own construction company. And so he would wear these plaided shirts to work every single day. He still does. So it's interesting thinking about the duality of my mom and my dad's side of the family, how it kind of composes in my body and letting like the suit express that. Because again, it's like, where is queerness born from? Like queerness is something innate. Queerness is something that is from our family. It's a part of our DNA. Mm-hmm. So recognizing, you know, the lineage of all of that, I think is really important.
Is there queerness in your family history? Apart from you and your twin?
I have cousins that are queer, and right. I have, like... And I'm sure I have other family members that are queer, but, we're from Alabama, so...
It's all hush-hush.
Maybe it didn't get discussed, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I definitely have some definitely out cousins, and, you know, and that are older, and that some that are younger, and I think that it's important, too, you know, like, being able to, like, have this community within your family also, and, like... And and we've all had, like, very different experiences, but also somehow similar experiences, and just knowing that... don't know, we have each other is also really important and powerful, and it's great.
So when you make your paintings, something that I really immediately recognized, you have an incredibly distinctive voice, I think, as an artist. Yeah. Like, I immediately got it, and I'd never heard of you, you see, and Russell called me up and was so excited because he'd met you, and he's looking at art all the time these days, and the minute I saw it, I got it, and I feel like you've already got this kind of very distinct language. But one of the things that stands out most for me is the shapes of the bodies, because I feel like you're often like almost
contorted.
Yeah, contorted, yes. And also like squeezed into the frame somehow. So you're kind of using every bit of the page, definitely, you know, to fill the body in.
It makes me think of Snake on the Nokia. Do you remember the Snake? Oh, really? The Snake would build up and it has that kind of dynamic.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you're sort of pushing the boundaries of the page or something. Do you know what I mean? Like you're definitely kind of, it's very much about spatial awareness and the figure in this kind of, contorted shape.
But they don't feel trapped.
No, they don't actually. Great. It's the opposite. I think they feel more joyful and sort of
great.
Like it makes you think of dancing and movement and kind of, they're very alive, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what the paintings are trying to achieve. I think a lot, particularly like the painting that you have and my earlier paintings when I first started the series, was all about the figure filling the space and taking up space. And I think the other thing that kind of helps with it feeling more joyful or more tense or as stressed is the contact with the eye. Like there is like this stare in all the paintings that kind of forces the viewer to read this figure and they connect straight out. So that's, I think, is really interesting, and I think it is about like taking up space, pushing the limits of space, being suppressed by space, but also somehow finding like a life and a joy and movement and mobility within whatever tight constraints that you're in. And I think about that a lot as like queer people, you know, over history, and like, you know, not necessarily obviously being, I mean, it's 2019 and trans people are still being killed on the street and no one's doing anything about it. Mm. But how do we survive? How do we, make better futures? How do we imagine better futures for ourselves? And that is kind of this resilience, which I think the stare does, and kind of the being this kind of comfortability in these tight spaces, because we can transform, we can move, we can dance.
And I think there's also something really interesting about the way that art can kind of carve out space for different people and for us all to be heard and have voices. And it somehow becomes bigger than ourselves. Like, I think through the act of creating art, that then will spread a message much, you know, faster and quicker than it would be even
if culture gets messages out quicker than anything
exactly,
else.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Especially popular
and
culture.
Same with music and everything. But for me, visual art, I love the way it can do that. And I think your work really successfully does that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I mean, like I was, you know, trained as a painter and a designer. And as a designer, obviously.
But you trained as graphic designer and you moved into fine art.
Yes. Well, I went when I was at. So to me, it's like this. I love that there is a distinction, I think, in like a commercial space. Yeah. But for me, the practices are so the same. Uh-huh. And the skills that I learned at RISD, you know, studying graphic design, were amazing and great, but they're the same skills that I need to make a painting. Mm-hmm. And I took lots of painting classes while I was at RISD. I was almost a painting major at RISD. And, you know, and all the painting, and I was trained traditionally as an oil painter. So, like, all of those same things we're thinking about, form, color, composition, texture, movement, are still the same principles that I think about when I make things for a client or a logo or a poster. So,
do you work with type a lot?
I work with type a lot, exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, I think my preference is always working with type and image. And I think.
Oh, no, type, sorry. You type off sections of the works on paper, don't you?
Oh, tape, yes. Tape, yes. Which I think also, you know, speaks to more like the design kind of like gridded, you know, vernacular.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as a designer, you know, my number one thing is to communicate ideas to people and to be as clear as possible. And I think similarly with painting, that's like our role as artists, you know, like visual language, like images, you know, Instagram is amazing because that's the easiest way to communicate with one another. Like people can read an emotion from an image versus like seeing you say it or reading it from text, I think.
And there is definitely a directness in your work, and you can feel that need to communicate. And I'm really into this idea of there's always these kind of hierarchies of, like, you know, fine art and then graphic design, and somehow one is different to the other. Yeah. But what I love about what you're doing, and I actually love in the history of art that I've been looking at in the past kind of 10 years or so, there's actually been people in the past who have tried to do this, mm-hmm. and at the time totally didn't get accepted, you know, within the fine art context. And now, you know, they're in museums, and people are actually realizing now the power of what they were doing.
Yeah.
Even like that amazing nun, Sister Carita Kent,
mm-hmm.
who used screen print a lot and was trying to democratize art,
yeah.
and make art for everyone. And I was thinking a lot about her when I was looking at your work, because I can see the importance of words and text and typography within what you do. And there's a British artist called Cara Phillips who was in the Turner
Scottish,
Prize.
She's
Scottish, oh. sorry. Yeah, but Great Britain is Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah, so Cara Phillips was in the Turner Prize a few years ago, and she also uses screen print. Mm. And they did a joint show at Spike Island in Bristol, which is like a museum, a public space in Bristol in England. And it had Sister Carita Kent and her work side by side.
Oh, amazing.
And it was two completely separate, you know, generations brought together. And I think it'd be really interesting to see your work with Sister Carita Kent.
Yes.
Or, you know what I mean? Like that kind of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I think what
she's got an upcoming... You know her work, do you?
I know her work.
She's got an upcoming show here.
Where?
Yeah, opening at... I'll look it up on my phone in a second. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Very soon, yeah.
I love her.
Yes.
We'll definitely check it out.
Yeah. Who are your influences?
Who are my influences? Obviously, Nina, Carrie James Marshall.
Yeah.
I'm really inspired by, you know, like master painters like Klimt. Like, I think the way that he treats
yes.
figures.
So I can see
like,
the
body.
The way they take out the space.
Yes, exactly. And Picasso has some amazing paintings, like particularly like his earlier works or like his blue paintings where he's dealing with the figure in relationship to space is really beautiful. Charles
Your
White.
Klimt, that's really excited me, the Klimt thing. And I absolutely see that straight away. Like
yeah.
the way the figure occupies the canvas or the paper. That's
definitely. And I also love what he does with textures and how he deals with, like, the surface.
Yes, because you have the layering effect and the fabric and the...
So many things.
Yeah.
I love his work.
Yeah.
And, like, it's interesting also to see how his work has, like, changes over time. Like, how he started kind of more naturalistic and kind of painting women in fields and how they became more patterned and decorative and how that was transformed to being on clothes and all these things. So I think, like, his work is very inspirational, beautiful. Romare Bearden, who is a collage artist... his work is extremely inspiring to me. And I love collage. And I think that's another kind of inspiration for like the texture of the paintings mm-hmm. where they are flat paintings and it's one piece of paper, but it does have this sense of like collage or layering or things are pasted on it, which is an effect that I love.
And Jekka Akinnili Crosby does that really
yes,
beautifully
yes,
well. But you're not even aware of it. And then you go forward and you're like, oh, hang on a minute.
I'm totally obsessed with Njideka. I just think she's
yes.
so incredible. And the transfer element to it.
Yes.
And just that texture created, it's so unique to
And they're
her.
Always on
yes.
paper. Why do you think paper's your...
I love paper. Well, one reason why I like paper because it feels so urgent to me. And
yep.
I think when I was first making these images and these paintings, it did feel urgent. I think it was like directly talking about a specific event that was just happening in relationship to how it affected me and my community. And I think also with the paper, as you build up the paint and over time, it like creates these layers and movement and kind of its own texture in itself.
Mm.
So the paper almost starts to feel like fabric,
mm.
Which
it's
I think
always
is,
moving paper, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you frame, you float paper, it moves all the time.
Yeah.
And it's really, and I think that's also really exciting too, in terms of like portraying what the paintings actually are, you know, portraying like the fabric of the suit through the texture of the painting. And I also love the idea that they also feel like quilts. Like they just take the paper, I think, takes on so many different live forms or life forms, which is why I love it. And now I'm switching to canvas because I'm thinking a lot more about preservation of my work and longevity of my work.
Right.
And how do I create images and work on materials that will literally just last longer and be easier
right.
to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, it's like, how can I preserve this work more? And it's less about just the urgency of putting them out. It's more about now crafting more, I guess, more, they're going to be more nuanced types of paintings.
That's great. And one of the other artists you mentioned I wasn't familiar with, which is
Remar.
Charles White.
Oh, yeah.
Charles White. So he also just had a show...
of his prints at the MoMA.
At the MoMA, yeah, exactly. And he was a, and why I really like him is because he was a commercial artist. Like, he was a draftsman. And then you can see how his paintings exactly look like somebody who drew architecture, drew, like, you know, plans and blueprints and things. It has that type of, like, it has that, like, very, I don't know, constructed
structure, yeah.
Yeah, of the paintings. And I love that. I love seeing, like, the nuances of someone's full practice being embodied in the work they're making, right. You know? Which is something that I'm striving to do. And it's hard, hard for me to disassociate my graphic design skills and processes from how I would, my painting skills and processes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's exciting. That's why I like painting too.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast. And we're here today with Budweiser beer. And we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and it's really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake.
And also, we're talking about your graphic design. Another element that's really important to you is this magazine that you work with, the 10th, is that right? And can you talk about that whole...
Yeah, so the 10th magazine is a Black, queer, fashion, lifestyle magazine. It was originally founded by Kari Septh and Andre Vernon and Cal Banks about maybe like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So when I first saw the 10th magazine, I saw it online. It was the America issue. And it was like these beautiful black men, and they were talking about queerness, and they were fashioning. And I was like, what is this? I need this magazine. What is this? So I ordered it, got it in the mail a couple of weeks later, and was flipping through the magazine and got about halfway through it and was like sobbing. Because it was one of the first times I had seen producing such a high, beautiful, high quality, such a considered way of super specific nuanced stories about black queer people from their own voice. And I was like, I have to work on this magazine. Like, I stopped, I emailed, I found them on Instagram or Facebook. I was like, Kari, you don't know me, but I just graduated from school. I need to help you with this. Like, this is a dream project. And so they responded back being like, yes, like, we love your work. We love you. Please, let's meet. Let's talk. And so since then, I've been working as the art director as the magazine. So now, yeah, which is really cool. So I've been working on like 4 or 5 issues at this point.
That's incredible. You completely made your own destiny there, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, like, it was, you know, like, again, like, someone took a risk on me, giving me an opportunity. I took a risk on myself by reaching out to someone. And like, you know, that almost never happens. And it worked out.
I think passion always goes a long way. Yeah. And I think, like, you can just sitting with you now, you can feel your passion and your intelligence and your
pride and your vitality. Identity and how important that is to you and how much you want to be a voice for that. And that's incredible.
Thank you.
And talking about like queer art, which seems to be marginalized still, do you feel like there's like a movement happening now? Like, there was a show recently, Louis Fratino, that was at Sikimachi.
I love him. Yeah.
And that was, for me, a bit of a breakthrough because that is very overtly queer.
Yes.
Like, men with hard-ons jerking each other off and laying in bed and being intimate, which feels like it's kind of been ignored. I mean, Tom of Finland started to move over and become more accepted.
Yeah, and I feel like
collected.
The only place you really ever saw something like that was probably like David Hockney's Prince or something. Do you know what I mean?
But
like,
it was always considered.
And again, and David Hockney was a white male artist.
But that side of the art, a lot of people sort of didn't shy away from. It's considered outsider
art.
And
I used to see those prints in people's homes, and you'd never see those works in a museum.
No.
And I was always like, David Hockney made these drawings of like two guys in a bed, you know? Yeah. And they were always my favorite thing he did because they spoke
and
to
Warhol,
me.
And Warhol did like close ups of penises, and you had Maple
Thorpe. But again, you didn't always see them.
But do you feel like there's a movement happening? Can you feel it as being?
Yeah, I mean, there was also the show, I don't even remember the name of it, but Jerry Sauce wrote an article in Vulture about this new show about queerness. It was like these artists from like the 1920s and 1930s, they like finally are showing their work in, or like maybe like 1940s, like 1930s, 40s, 50s, something like that. And again, like, I feel like now, particularly in New York City, like, there is more space for these different nuanced stories. And even with Louis' work, right, like, his paintings are so tender, you know? Like, they are showing, like, what people call, like, explicit gay sex, but at the same time, they're actually just, like, these beautiful, warm, kind of love-filled paintings. They don't feel
beautiful
explicit.
Beautiful paintings, yeah.
Explicit at all. And, you know, like, and that's one of the reasons why we started Codify Art, which is my arts collective, which I founded with Brown and Risi students. And the reason why we started was to make space for more queer artists of color and queer artists and people of color and women of color and, like, making sure there is a space for it. I think, you know, there have been a lot of efforts like Codify Art from different organizations, different groups. Like, there was a show at the New Museum, like, 3 years ago, that was all about gender identity and expression and fluidity and all of that. So I just feel like people are recognizing that, like, this work and this art form, these narratives are valid and beautiful. And as, I don't know, poignant and impactful as any straight person making a painting about love, you know? Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think that has to do with, like, the culture, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we are, regardless of how things sometimes feel on the news and what sometimes we feel is happening in, you know, Alabama or wherever, I think people are more open and more accepting. And obviously, I think that's happening. So,
I mean, I was talking to Russell when we landed here, and I said to him, if you think even like 10 years ago, how far we have gone in Western culture, you know, being more open about gender fluidity, you know, about non-binary, about all of these things. You know, even 10 years ago, it was kind of alien to me, the idea of discussing all of that. Like, people weren't talking about that. Mm-hmm. And now in London, the Hayward Gallery's got a show opening all about those topics with amazing artists, you know. Yeah. And that's in a major museum in London. It's like so good. And I think it's so important that we're able to talk about, you know, different experiences, because we can all learn from each other's, you know, histories and stories. And
do you know your peers who are like doing the same sort of thing?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Who are your peers at the moment? Like artists like...
Oh, like Jonathan Lyndon Chase, yes, like John C. Edmonds, like, I mean, there's so, like, Devin Morris, like, I mean, like, these are all, to me, like, amazing painters and photographers and artists and installation artists that are making beautiful work. You know, through Codify Art, I've been able to connect with and work with so many amazing artists, like Eve Olivier Mandura, who does porcelain and puts, like, pornographic images of men having sex on beautiful fine china. And, like, it's just, and it turns into a pattern. You should look his work up. It's really beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
Is it like ancient Greek stuff? Like they?
No, it's like no.
It makes me think of the Birdcage. You know, I've seen the Birdcage,
but it's like the Birdcage in terms of like the floral kind of patterny, you know, decorative aesthetic. But then when you lean into it, it's like, oh, these are actually like men
sucking each other off.
Yeah, like porn stars. Oh. So it's really amazing. So I think there are so many amazing artists that I know, of course, are doing amazing work, and you know, I'm excited for, you know. Like, I love all these shows about identity and about queerness and about fluidity, but I also just want to be like, this is a painter that does landscapes and they so happen to be queer and they're in a show with another landscape painter, you know? So it's not so much about identity, but it's like, but I get where we are right now, you know? Like, and that's a lot of the work that we started out as Codify of like, okay, we're going to be like making sure that we're like, you know, identity-centered work or shows. And then we got tired of that, like, because we don't want our work and the stuff that we do just to be we don't want to prop up our own identities and like erase kind of like, you know, the actual nuance.
Well, you don't want to ghettoize it. Yeah. I guess it was like a lot of women artists kicked back when women artists started to be successful. And they were like, well, I don't just want to be a woman artist. I want to be an artist. But it was like they had to make a subculture within a culture for them to work up. And I guess this, you get ghettoized and then it becomes mainstream.
Right. And I, you know, and it's like, and like we've done shows since then that definitely are like, talking about like just being at home and like what does it mean to
and
have
I think
like,
that's so important.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually a lot of what you're doing with your graphic design side of with your partner, your business you have, like I love the fact that I think that is where you're almost going to take all of these ideas to the mainstream without it even having a title. Do you know what I mean? It just becomes part of culture, visual culture. Like you'll see it as a logo, you'll see it as a magazine, you'll see it in a, I don't know, a business's catalog or whatever. But,
exactly. But
it's that approach, you know, to visual thinking somehow. Definitely. And I think that's why it's so interesting and so important.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
What's next for you?
What's next for me? So I am busy. I'm getting ready for a show in LA, which is opening September 7th at Steve Turner Gallery.
Oh, great. Cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be great. I'm doing like, there'll be all new works, and they're all going to be on canvas.
Amazing. And will you make immersive rooms for it? Is it going to be?
It's going to be an immersive space. Yeah. We'll see exactly what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited about it.
It's what sort of scale are the canvases? How big are they?
I'm doing a lot of 18 by 24 bust paintings, and I'm doing a lot of 36 by 48 kind of like figure paintings in the space. And then I might do like one bigger.
Amazing. Painting. And same medium as you work on the paper.
Yeah, just acrylic, same type of technique. Well, slightly altered, but I think they look really good. I'm really excited.
How long does it take you to make a painting? Is it quite a slow process or?
So like for the bust paintings, for example, I can probably do a bust, like two or three busts in like a week and a half.
Oh, I want to see these. Have you made them already? Are you still,
I made
still
them. Yeah, I can show you pictures.
Yes, please.
But you know, but it's mostly about things drying because I'm like layering and layering and layering, like, you know, paint on top of each other and trying to make it as opaque as possible. So it's more like, that's why I have to work on multiple paintings at the same time because it's like a waiting process.
Yeah. It's quite interesting because your paintings, as I said before, have this kind of like bursting energy or something. They feel very alive.
Yeah.
And what I was interested in was whether they did take a while to make them, because obviously I often think if you spend too long sometimes you kind of can lose that energy, that immediacy. But you seem to really be able to keep that. But then they don't look like they've been made really fast either. So it's a kind of amazing skill to have. How do you make sure you maintain that kind of aliveness in the work?
Well, it's interesting because, like, with, like, the bust paintings, for example, like, so, like, there is kind of, like, this I feel like there's an abstraction and simplification of the actual body form, but the internal shapes and like the way that I'm dealing with dimension, I feel like is what the energy is, because all of that feels so much more gestural, I think, than what you feel in like this rigid structure on the outside. So I think it's like this tension of like kind of like these moving, nuanced, subtle shapes inside versus like this very strong, stark shape on the outside. So I think it's like that feels like the paintings are vibrating a little bit.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Oh, it's so exciting.
So we
I
are
love your energy, by the way. Sorry, I just totally think you're incredible.
Yeah,
I'm so inspired.
Right, see?
And we're both like super tired today, but like
yeah,
actually
you've given us life.
Giving us life.
We are living right now
because
of
so
John
much for
Key.
Me.
Of course. So we ask all of our guests two really kind of stressful questions. The first one is, if you could do an art heist, you could steal any work of art in the world anywhere, a touchstone artwork that you can have to yourself, what would it be?
Oh, whoa. That's a really good question.
Thank you.
I would want the paintings. A painter I would want to live with would be a Carrie J's Marshall painter.
Yeah.
Or Alice Neal. I would still
Alice Neal.
I also love her. Huge inspiration. I would still Alice Neal painting.
Do you know one in particular?
I love the ones that she... So she has a whole series of paintings that she did in Spanish Harlem.
Yes.
And there's like one painting that she did with James Baldwin, and I would want that one.
Wow.
Yes.
Where have you seen that?
I haven't. Oh, have I seen it? I think it was at David Zwiner.
David Zwiner Gallery, yeah.
Yeah, I think she had a show there like maybe like 2 years ago at this point, maybe 3 years ago.
Yes.
I saw it there, but it's not like, mostly just online or in the books that I have.
No, yeah, I love
them.
They're
incredible,
well.
Her paintings. Yeah. We actually were just at the Whitney the other day and we saw her painting of Andy Warhol.
Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Which
that's
is
really
such
good.
An incredible painting.
She's kind of half finished, but she left it like that and it was just...
Oh, it's such a good one.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. That's a good answer. And our next question is...
What is your favorite color?
My favorite color is blue.
Blue?
Really?
I thought you was going to say violet or purple.
My favorite color is blue. And it's always been blue, besides for a very short time where my favorite color was yellow when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
And then that was like a week. And then after that, I switched back to blue. My favorite color is blue. I used to wear a ton of blue growing up. And even in college, I wore all navy. Like, everybody was wearing all black in the design program. I was wearing all navy. Now I wear all black.
So there's no blue in your work, though?
There's no blue in my work right now. And
is that hard to resist that, then, if it's your favorite color?
It's interesting because the other thing I'm doing this summer is I'm going to be going to LA at a different point at the end of June, the beginning of July, doing a residency at Otis College of Art and Design.
Congratulations.
And so the first week is going to be, they have like a studio, like just like come and do anything. And they said, Jung, come and paint. So I think that I'm going to do blue paintings for that week.
That's interesting because you earlier said
blue, blue portraits.
Just like, I don't know, play. I'm just going to play figure it out. I'm trying to take more risk and make more time to play. Like, I have my serious paintings that I'm doing that I like know what I want them to be. But I also like, you know, I always try to do a couple of things all the time that are just like new and different. And so I think I'm going to start doing some blue paintings over the summer, or have like paintings with blue objects in them. I'm not sure yet.
Will you put them up on Instagram?
No.
No,
no.
I looked at your Instagram now, and your last post was like April.
I'm so bad at Instagram. I'm more of a stories person. Like, right. I'll put it on my Instagram stories.
Yes, so I see your stories all the time.
Yeah,
yes.
But I'm not like a... I don't know why I don't post things. I always think every morning, I'm like, I should post something on Instagram. And then it's 7 p.m. I was like, oh, no, I forgot. But I put things on stories. It'll probably be on my stories.
What kind of objects?
I don't know.
Have you painted objects before?
I have painted
plants.
Objects.
You painted plants.
I painted plants. I painted vases and painted, like, I don't know. But I want to paint more.
Some of your characters have books, don't they? Some of your figures, do they carry objects? Am I imagining that?
No, I don't think... No, none of the figures so far carry objects. But I don't know what the objects are going to be. I don't know. I think I'm excited about, like, writing a little bit this summer and, like, just coming up with some fun new ideas and pushing the work. I don't know how the blue would show up in like paintings I would pin in the gallery, but I'm excited about just playing and experimenting and trying some new things out.
I'm excited for your excitement.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Well, this has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Who are you rep by now?
No one. I'm an independent artist.
How is that?
I love it. I mean, I think right now where I am in my career is that I feel like I'm finally getting to a place where I'm super confident in the paintings that I'm making and like how fast I can make them and like the body of work that I have and like even just having extra paintings now. Like I have some paintings and like before I was like making paintings and selling them and I like would never have any paintings. Yeah. And I feel like now I just feel like I'm building up more of like my own practice and
you like to be with your own work as well. You like yeah. to surround yourself with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm excited about, you know, like I think that will hopefully change very soon. But I'm not like putting any pressure on it and I'm not stressed about it because I'm showing, people are still liking my work and people.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
You know, yeah. And I enjoy making the work on my own, you know.
Terms,
yeah. So I'm excited about the opportunity of shifting that, but I'm not rushing it.
I guess the graphic design as well, that's really successful. It gives you enough money at the moment to
definitely.
Be able to
definitely.
Really explore the art and not have the pressure on yourself to sell and to...
Right. So, yeah, it's nice, like, you know, like, I'm an artist and I get to support myself with my other art and it's nice and it's very, like, I feel very fortunate, like, that I can do all of this also at the same time.
You deserve it because you're incredibly talented.
Thank you.
Does music play a big part in your life?
Yeah, so, like, my twin, Jared, who's actually at RISD right now getting their MFA in painting, we sing together all the time. And so when they were in New York... we made music together that we showed in our spring break show last year in 2018. And I did a cappella in college. Like I was the musical conductor director for 2 years. Like, you know, I love like being surrounded by music when I work and I love like singing and painting and, but I don't perform that much. I'm not like, my twin is definitely the performer.
Really?
And us. Like he's a dancer, he directs, he like city theater at Brown, he works at the Public, like he is the more performance person. Not to say that we don't always talk about writing a play and performing it.
What's his work like?
So Jarrett first started out with kind of these black and white oil text paintings, and then they switch to incorporating performance and dancing, so they paint with their hair. So our grandmother has...
paint with their hair?
They paint with their hair. So they pull their hair up into a ponytail, and they dip it into tempura paint, and they paint on walls and large canvases, and they make music and scores, and they perform this. And it started because... Our grandmother...
That's fucking cool.
It's really cool. It's really beautiful. It's really amazing. You should look him up. JAR.KEY on Instagram. Jared Key. But our grandmother had an expression that, you know, your hair is your strength. And it came from the story in the Bible, Samson and Delilah.
Man,
and, you
his
know,
haircut, yeah.
He got his haircut. He lost all of his strength. So Jared was, you know, growing his hair out, all of this. And in the middle of the night... Jared felt like he heard our grandmother's voice tell him, like, wake up and start painting with your hair. And he was like, what? And then that's what he did. He, like, literally next morning, I was there, straightened with his hair with a hot comb like our grandmother used to do, and then got the tempura paint, put the paper on the wall, and started dancing and making these gestures on the wall. And it's also amazing, too, because our grandmother couldn't read, so thinking about how do you translate... stories and memories that don't necessarily exist in kind of text or Latin language, and how can it be more about the expression of the body and like the almost like transgenerational, you know, I don't know, history that's kind of born within you.
That's so great. We've actually spoken about hair quite a lot with a few other artists we've interviewed.
Yes.
One is called Zadie Char, and she's Canadian, but her family are South Korean, and she uses a lot of like synthetic hair and this idea of like being a kind of warrior or something, and it's really amazing.
Amazing.
And then also Martin Creed, who's a British conceptual artist, he's used hair in his work quite a lot, and the idea of hair growing a bit like it growing like feelings, and that somehow as your hair grows, it represents feelings, and this whole kind of interior world being represented through your hair growing or something. And we were also talking about Janine Anthony, who was in the 1992, she made that amazing work in Loving Care, where she used her hair as a paintbrush with hair dye.
Yeah.
And that was kind of more feminist work. But
definitely.
But that's almost like a precursor to what it sounds like your brother's doing. Your twin is doing.
Yeah. And there's also another painter that I'm completely forgetting the name right now. And it's going to like come to me right at, after I leave here. But a black painter that also was painting with his hair like the 70s and 80s and did awesome. These like really crazy performance paintings. So he would lay the paper on the floor and like, it's very interesting in relationships like Janine and Tony and all of these people that uses their bodies to like talk about work or talk about their identities or talk about whoever, whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is very interesting.
I also love hair because of DNA.
Yes.
I think it's such a, I don't know, it's just a really great sort of...
It's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a fingerprint.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there rivalry with you and your twin? At all?
It doesn't seem like it. It seems like you just got nothing but love and support.
No, it's not. It's not at all. Someone else asked me this question a few weeks ago. Like, oh, is there like a competitive or like a contentious vibe between us? And yeah. It's like, no, we are each other's biggest advocates. We're each other's like biggest critics. We are each other's biggest supporters. Like our parents raised us like, you know, being like, it's only you two. So y'all have to be best friends. Like you don't have any other family. So you have to... you know, always look out for each other. And
isn't that amazing?
It's really amazing. Yeah.
That's such a good message to tell everyone. Because we just interviewed an artist called Joyce Pensato the other day, and she was talking about growing up as an Italian American in Brooklyn. And her brother was always, they were quite competitive in a way, but mainly because of the male female thing when she was growing up, because she was growing up in the kind of 50s. I think she was born in the 40s. Mm. So it was a time when women, you know, weren't necessarily as equal as men and were meant to be homemakers or whatever. And she was always an artist and just wanted to do it. So she had this kind of competitive thing with her brother that's kind of sounds like it's gone on all the way through their life, but which can also lead to
great work
actually. Yeah. And great, and also you do love each other even if you're competitive with each other.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? But I was kind of really interested, I've been thinking about it a lot over the last few days, that kind of idea of you know, even growing up myself, I had a brother when I was growing up, he died, but when we were younger, the kind of competition you have, but then also the way that you can support each other in your creativity. And I remember my brother being really into like me making music before I was even writing songs or doing music in my teenage years. And it was him actually who kept saying to me, oh, you should do music. And then when he finally died, I think I did do music because he sort of encouraged me to or something. Mm. And it's interesting how out of competition you can actually become a very creative kind of flourish thing. Yeah.
Definitely. Like, I would say, like, I did at my solo show at the Rubber Factory, I did a reading for the first time of my work, of my writing that has inspired kind of all of this, like, this mythology and this character and these paintings. And that was, Jared told me I should do that. Jared was like, you should do a reading. Like, you have this writer, you've never done a reading. Like, that's what you should do for your show. And I was like, that's such a good idea, you know, like,
right.
And well, so it's nice.
So spoken word, you stand up in front of an audience.
I have writing that I write, and I like made a little booklet and like read it. Like I performed a reading.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was nice. It was really fun. And I want to do more of that. I want to like, and I love writing, and I love, you know, sharing stories. And I think it was interesting doing it, like sharing stories that I actually wrote.
Right.
Which is fun.
So what kind of stories are they that you're writing?
So mostly they are like, they kind of are dissected into these four colors, like red, green, black, and violet. And so they really speak to those different things. So like, there are stories about my family. There are stories about growing up in Alabama. There are stories about the environments that I grew up around. There are stories about me first recognizing my queerness and these first, like they're more like, kind of, I feel like abstracted, like memories, you know, based off of my personal experiences.
Love that. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to learn more about your work, like, and get to know you more over the coming years.
Yes.
It's been such a privilege.
You'll just come
to
London
you.
At some point.
Love you.
I'm coming to London, actually, this summer. I'm doing a lot this summer. I'm going to be in London July 25th. Through the 31st.
So a vacation, or are you there to do
I'm with
research?
Vacation. My mom's going to be there. My twin's going to be there. It's going to be so fun. Well, and I've never been to London. So
we'll hopefully see you there.
We've just opened
a big new gallery complex about an hour outside London on
the
train. And it's by the seaside.
Let's do it.
I would love to show you that space.
I would love to go.
Yeah, and we have an artist department there. We actually have a whole printing facility.
Oh,
and
wow.
We make screen prints, lithographs, etchings all on site.
I would love you to come at some point
and make stuff with us, because I've just fallen crazy in love with you today. I think you're amazing.
Yes.
And that would be awesome. But so not on this trip, but you could do it in the future and come stay. We have an artist department and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it would be a joy to have you come and hang out in Margate.
That would be amazing. I would love that.
Yeah. Well, John Key, thank you so much. I feel like this is I'm so excited. I feel like we're on the beginning of something.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. What's
very,
your
very cool.
My JKey13. JKEY13.
Well,
and my website is johnkeyart.co.
Awesome.
J-O-N, that is.
J-O-N,
yes. When does your show in Los Angeles open?
September 7th.
Okay, so everyone listening, get your tickets to LA. and if you can't afford to do that, then look it up on the internet or on Instagram. And we will make sure that we post pictures of John's work. At Talk Art, you can see everything we've discussed today, including a lot of the artists that he referenced and mentioned today. We will be back very soon.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
New York.
Big love. Bye.
Big love. Bye. You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Recorded at Spiritland London by Anthony Shaw and edited by Gareth Isles. Subscribe to Talk Art on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.